our company, like our mission is to make digital ownership universal. And like what it's like a grand lofty statement, but there's some intentionality behind it. Like there's no word NFTs in our mission statement, right? It's more about digital ownership and it can be manifest in different ways. And the word universal, I think, is important because we are not a platform that just wants to serve like pro traders or like pros only. What we want is, I actually want to see a world where billions of people come on chain, come to Web3, and this is like the new internet.
Season 3 of the NFT Now podcast. We are so back.
Like, we never left, bro. You know what I mean? A little bit longer hair, a little scruffier beard. But, you know, so much has happened. So much has transpired since the launch. Since our last season, actually, we've launched the Now Network. And the Now Network is our exclusive access to all things Web3 content, our home to Now Pass members, where you can actually earn points as you consume, share, and publish your ideas and thoughts into it. It's our way of bringing a new business model to media, where we share in the value that we're creating with our community members and our community at large. So if you haven't had a moment to check it out, go to now.network, pick up a Now Pass. That'll open up the gates and begin earning your experience points and start experiencing Web3 like you've never have before. Telling you, you may actually get some points for listening to this podcast inside the Now Network. So go check it out. Who do we have on today, Matt? Like, yo, who is this amazing opener, man? Talk to me.
We got a strong one for the season debut. We have Jack Liu, co-founder, CEO of Magic Eden. Magic Eden is a multi-chain marketplace spanning Solana, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Polygon, and has been championing creator royalties with partnerships with some of the leading projects in the space. What are you excited about for this conversation, Alec?
Matt, you know I'm a founder's founder. You know what I mean? For my coaching element, for my coaching days, I really want to know what that journey of building Magic Eden has been like, man. Like, I'm just so interested into seeing companies who have navigated so much turmoil, so much pushback and downturns and FUD from the community and still rise, right? So I'm excited to hear from Jack exactly how they navigated this from 2021 to 22 to 23 to now.
Likewise. And, you know, it's been amazing. You know, one of the things we'll touch on, I'm sure, is, you know, just being able to take those calculated bets. You know, like a lot of people wrote ordinals off. A lot of people, you know, didn't think Solana had legs. And look who's still standing and thriving, you know, in 2024, as we're on the cusp of a new bull market. We're in a new bull market, let's be real.
Yo, honestly, I'll be real, man. I didn't think Solana had legs at all, man. I didn't even think it had a body. I was wrong. I'm wrong. You know what I mean? But I know when I'm wrong, but I am not a Solana believer, but that's a different story for a different day, guys.
Well, we'll get into all that and more in a great conversation. Without any further ado, Jack Liu. Jack Liu on the NFT Now podcast. So glad to have you, man. How you doing?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks so much for having me, folks. Really, really looking forward to it.
Man, I'm kind of upset with you, man. We should have had Jack on a long time ago, bro. Like,
we were sleeping. Let's acknowledge it. But we're here now, and it's a great time to be talking. You had a little launch earlier this week, you know, just a little marketplace, you know, supporting a small chain called Ethereum. Tell us a bit about that launch. How are you feeling? How's it going?
Yeah, look, really, really excited. And yeah, thanks for having me on. Actually, I remember Matt, like I remember following you on Twitter because I always remember your punk PFP. And I was like, God damn, that's a fucking awesome punk PFP, right? I really am.
It looks like me, right? You know, it does. Especially when I get that handlebar, you know, the handlebar.
don't slap him anymore, bro. He doesn't need any more.
It is inflating as we speak. super, super proud and super excited about this Ethereum launch. And to be honest, like I feel like the first 2 months of 2024, like we've had many, many launches, whether it's rewards program, our wallet, you know, a bunch of things that we're doing with our Solana OGs around like Diamond Drop, and now like the marketplace on Ethereum that respects royalties, I feel like is really the capstone, right, around this whole series. And in that sense, two things. One is, I really feel like this capstone launch around ETH is really kind of the end in terms of telling the world who Magic Eden really is. And that part is all about, hey, Magic Eden is the only like true like multi-ecosystem, multi-chain marketplace in a world where NFTs is already multi-chain, right? Where Ethereum is the kind of the genesis and cultural home of NFTs. We're very excited to launch there. But also now Bitcoin Ordinals is massive. Solana is also having a really amazing renaissance moment as well. And Magic Eden is now like on all of the chains where like the best NFT content and the best NFT creators are. And then secondly, couldn't be more proud to launch this Ethereum marketplace in respecting creator royalties and making a stand for creators in partnership with Yuga and a bunch of folks within our creator alliance. So yeah, very, very excited. And yeah, there was a lot of sweat that went behind the scenes into this. So I'm very, very excited to show the world our baby on this. Yeah.
I'd love to take a step back before this launch of Ethereum, because you guys launched in 2021, you know, in the midst of the early bull run, and, you know, a lot of the community really fudded you guys at the beginning when you guys were starting, you know, like, oh, who needs a Solana marketplace, or, you know, Solana NFTs are not even a real thing, right? Like, what is this going to happen? And then you guys were ahead of the curve and were one of the first, if not the first, marketplace to adopt Bitcoin Ordinals, and then moved in things forward and then capitalized on that community and then moved things to Element to now being one of the more respected and more like defined marketplace that also has a technology component of your own wallet. But before we go into those aspects, let's talk about the hero's journey of this founding of this company, right? Because so many of us we always see the overnight successes, right? But what was it like to build in a market that was technically betting against you?
Yeah, no, thank you. And yeah, too kind on hero's journey. I feel like we're just grinding and working it out as we go. Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about the genesis and you know the way here. Look, so we have four founders at Magic Eden. All four of us have actually known each other for a long time before Magic Eden. And actually the kind of the intersection in all of our stories is we were all mostly like big tech guys. And, you know, we were, whether it was like consumer product management in big tech in Web2, or, you know, our technical co-founders came from like Uber, Facebook, or like engineering management, that kind of discipline. But we actually were all kind of like closet degens on the side, right? Like we were playing tokens 2017, 2018, like me and my co-founder Josh, and we were like yield farming AVAX, you know, like in 2018, that kind of thing. Yeah, we were very, very into crypto, and we were like true believers in the power of Web3. But our story was, you know, every time we actually wanted to do something full-time in crypto, we didn't feel like we had an edge because, you know, we came from consumer internet, and it all seemed like for the longest time, crypto was really about like finance, right? It seemed like people who came from finance backgrounds, trading backgrounds, who can build exchanges, build DeFi, build trading shops, they like found outside success. And we didn't feel like we had that edge to do, you know, to make a dent in here. Then, as you say, 2021, what we saw was like Ethereum NFTs pop off. Like this is Beeple selling stuff for 69 mil, like Bored Apes, like going crazy. And we said, hey, you know what? This feels like the consumer moment of crypto. Because now we're not talking about like consensus algorithm A or like, you know, staking module B. This is now about culture, art, parties, gaming. This is stuff like that everyday person on the street can understand, right? And that's when we got excited. We said, hey, maybe we could actually do something here. And then we chose Solana because, it was more of a white space. Ethereum was very competitive. And number two, like, you know, coming from more like consumer internet background, we thought, hey, maybe a new chain that could enable really fast throughput that could, you know, allow us to build some really crisp and nice experiences and really show the world like the boundaries of what like a crypto dApp could really be, something that looks more like what we'd experience as like, you know, consumer apps at scale. But having said all of that, the other day I pulled up like my seed round investment deck from like 2021 just to, yeah, I was showing something to the team, And yeah, we always wanted to do multi-chain and bet on creators because our underlying thesis has always been NFTs is like content. It's a little like Netflix. It's like Netflix and an exchange built in one where there is a trading and an exchange aspect, but really you want good content that's interesting to people to pull people in, right? And that is why we also want to support creators. And in that sense, we wanted to do multi-chain from day one because, hey, like the best creators, they can go on any chain. They can be in any ecosystem and there should be like no boundaries after a while. And then we always wanted to like start from Solana, then expand to different ecosystems with very vibrant NFT creators and NFT content.
Absolutely awesome. I want to ask you a question. Was there ever a moment in your journey or with your co-founders that you're like, yo, what the fuck are we doing? Like, we should just like hang the coat and just like go back to Facebook, go back to Beta, whatever, right?
Was there ever a moment? Go back to yield farming.
Yeah. Like, was there ever a low moment in this whole journey?
Yeah, so the yield farming did not work out, by the way. I put up my AVAX. Dude, I put up my AVAX wallet a few, like a while back. I was like, wait, I only have this much AVAX? I thought I had way more. The yield farming did not work out. No, I think for us, we had like, you know, no shortage of challenges. You know, happy to be real about it. But we never, very thankful that, you know, we never had this moment of like throwing the towel, right? And what we had this, we actually had two thoughts there, which is very early on when we started this company, we all shared this stat with everyone, like the four founders. We said, you know, the number one reason why startups fail is the co-founders hate each other. Like that's actually the number one reason. Co-founders break up and then the company fails. So then we said, hey, what we should do is really make sure we're aligned, like spiritually aligned. How we, not just what we want to achieve out of Magic Eden, but who we are as people and what we believe, right? And we had this saying that then became like somewhat of a cultural value inside the company, which is your problem is my problem. And one day my problem will be yours. And this like deep sense of like almost like brotherhood and camaraderie to say, yo, we got each other's backs. And when shit gets really tough, we'll still have each other's backs. And when things got really, really tough, we always like brought that moment up, right? So we definitely had no shortage of lows in our journey, but you know, like that spirit really like really brought us together and helped us pull through. And yeah, man, like you know, as you mentioned, like with like 3 months into Magic Eden, we launched like you know what. We had this like launch pad that like rugged the whole Solana industry called Balloonsville. Like had to, yeah, like deeply apologize to the community, like course correct a lot of things. Later on, we had our own issues with, we actually had a lot of like scaling challenges in 2023. We grew from effectively like 4 people to 100 people in 12 months. And then we faced a lot of like internal execution problems. So we had to like be very honest to ourselves about why we're in this place, why we couldn't execute as well as before. But all of that stuff aside, I think that sense of like your problem is my problem, that really like held us through, right? And helped us pull through. Yeah.
I really like that. And you know, Jack, obviously having 4 co-founders and making the strategic decisions that you made, because if you think about it, like we kind of touched on, you know, people knew Magic Eden as the Solana marketplace, right? And you were extremely early with Ordinals, really carved out a line, like a lane there when a lot of people weren't taking it seriously. And now obviously expanding into Ethereum, you know, the strategic moves you've made. I'm curious, like, you know, how did you achieve internal alignment on some of those big decisions? Because those are decisions that look really smart in hindsight, everything, you know, in hindsight, but I know were risky at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good question. I try not to go on my soapbox for too long because I feel like we can talk for hours about this kind of stuff. So I think there's a few things, which is number one, we have this saying inside Magic Eden called mission versus opportunity. And you know, mission versus opportunity means like how much do you prioritize like your core long-term, you know, like baked plans versus how much do you think about opportunity? And we always had this thought inside the company of like, we should be like 70% mission, 30% opportunity. And that is very, that philosophy is, I think is kind of different to like, let's say a Web2 startup. Like for example, if you're like a Web2 SaaS startup, you might want to be like 99% mission, right? Because you got your plan, you got to like build a sales team, like go penetrate this market. But I think fundamentally crypto, NFTs, Web3, it's changing so fast that it's like every layer of the market and the stack is changing. Like the protocol is changing, the chain is changing, the market structure is changing, the user expectations changing, the wallets are changing. So you have to accommodate for like sudden unpredictable changes and be able to like capture that. So that philosophy, like I think, helped us be open-minded to things like ordinals. And then the second thing is that we always had this thought in the company of like, you know, we need to have good intuition about what the market is doing in crypto. But how do you have intuition? You can only have intuition if you have the right people. So we actually hire a lot of people from the community, and we specifically like test for this kind of stuff in the recruiting process. And I'll give you the ordinal story, which is I heard about ordinals through like one of our partners in France. So like I had this call. He was like, hey, you should like watch out for this ordinals thing. And that, at that time, it was like less than 6,000 inscriptions on the Bitcoin blockchain. And I'm like kicking myself for like not buying one of the inscriptions, like a Bitcoin rock or something. And then I started telling my co-founders, going, hey, this ordinals thing's popping off. We should look into it. And I said, oh, I heard on the grapevine that it's so early that people are trading on Google spreadsheets. Like that's what's happening. It's like wild. And then it so happened that we looked into our internal company Slack. There was already a secret group of like 10, 15 people who are trading ordinals. And I looked into who that group was. It was like our general counsel and our head of security. I was like, I was like, yo, you guys have day jobs. What are you even doing here, man? And then, you know, like then we started talking to people. We started talking to, you know, like my general counsel was educating me on like ordinals. And then that like helped us build like intuition throughout the organization to say, hey, this could be something real, right? That it wasn't like a strategic PowerPoint exercise. It's more like you have to have this blood and have this DNA inside the company to be willing to do that. And then the last thing, like I'll just wrap it up real quick, is we also believe in like betting deep, like doing something properly. So when we said, hey, should we do something like ordinals? Initially, someone said, oh, maybe we should just build a gallery, just to like something light, like MVP. Maybe this whole ordinals thing will die. And then, but we actually sat down, like me and my co-founder sat down and said, you know what, we should build a marketplace, because no one believes that you can build a marketplace on Bitcoin. But that's actually exactly the problem that's worth solving for, because that's like the high value, hard thing, right? And if you bet early and we make it, then you can unlock a lot more value. So yeah, those three things, like mission opportunity, having like intuition inside the company, like hiring people who really love NFTs, like this kind of thing. And then, yeah, like betting deep, right? Rather than trying to do something lightweight. Right?
That's really interesting, man. I love that going deep. And I love the missions, how you put like mission versus opportunity. There comes a lot of philosophy. Where do you get these types of philosophies? Because a lot of founders don't have these mantras or these ethos. Like, where does it come from?
Dude, from making mistakes, man. Dude, definitely. For sure. Like
Real talk,
man. Like mission versus opportunity. You know, there was a time, I'm very real about it. I'm like very real about it to our own company as well. Like when Magic Eden, we were very small, when we were 20 people, yeah, I was paranoid that we were going to die like every day. So when you're like that paranoid, you become very reactive. And we did a lot of like copy paste kind of stuff. Like, oh, someone like is doing this. Let's like actually do that. Right. But that's actually overweighing towards opportunity. You have to have a good sense of mission, right? Of like what you're trying to do. Our sense of mission is we want to focus on like, you know, more like casual users, keep the experience simple, because I think over the long term, that's actually what crypto needs. Crypto is like too complicated. We believe in like cross-chain, like no boundaries in communities, because we believe in getting the best NFT creators and content on the platform. That's our mission. But initially, when we were paranoid, we overweighed towards opportunity. And then, yeah, the product was bad, you know, like at a certain point. That's actually one, talk about FUD, like in the community, that was actually a lot of the reasons for the FUD, right? Because we were just doing shit at low quality that was reactive. But you can't overcorrect to mission, because if you overcorrect to mission, you miss some stuff to it, because you have to you cannot have like true tunnel vision. You have to be willing to be curious and understand what's in the ecosystem, right? And then now we're like finally having made mistakes on both sides, then we can like figure out like what's the true path, right?
Yeah. Speaking of the true path, you guys have some incredible numbers, man. Like you guys are one of the only marketplaces that have their own wallet. So I'd love to touch on that. I know we've discussed this off camera, but you guys have over 200,000 users on the wallet with 30,000 active on daily active users. And you guys have done some tremendous freaking volume across the board. I'm looking at Dune right now, and like February has been your all-time high in the last 12 months, you know? So like, what do you garner this to, right? It's like slow and steady wins the race, for example, but like why incorporate your own wallet? Why not just stick to a marketplace? And what do you attribute the new volume to?
Yeah. It's a great question. I think, maybe like backing up 1 second, like our company, like our mission is to make digital ownership universal. And like what it's like a grand lofty statement, but there's some intentionality behind it. Like there's no word NFTs in our mission statement, right? It's more about digital ownership and it can be manifest in different ways. And the word universal, I think, is important because we are not a platform that just wants to serve like pro traders or like pros only. What we want is, I actually want to see a world where billions of people come on chain. Come to Web3, and this is like the new internet, right? There's new forms of commerce, new forms of finance, new forms of culture. That is our vision. Then to actually like live up to that vision and manifest that vision, then it comes to the question of like, why wallet, you know, why all this stuff? I realized that in 23, we realized that like, okay, we want to be on different chains because each chain have different creators, right? But without Magic Eden's wallet, you have to download 3 wallets to use Magic Eden. You have to use like Phantom on Sol, MetaMask on ETH, and then like, you know, Xverse, these amazing wallets on Bitcoin. But that we cannot force our users to do that. That's not going to make it. That's NGMI, right? Like over the long term. And, you know, maybe over 5 years, 10 years, Magic Eden will onboard 20 more chains. But we cannot ask our users to download 20 wallets. Like that's just not going to cut it. And there's no way that millions and billions of people is going to come on chain if that's the world that they live in. So that's when we realized what we actually need is we actually need our own wallet to be the stepping stone, right? And this wallet will have multi-chain connect, so you connect to all of our chains at the same time, so you don't have to like switch around, like disconnect, connect, all of that. And it should allow you to onboard into different chains easily. So our wallet allows you to swap Solana to Bitcoin, Bitcoin to ETH in a non-custodial way. We spend a lot of time working with some partners on that. And then over the long term, when we onboard 10 more chains, you know, chain A, chain B, chain C, chain D, the marketplace and the wallet can work in the same way. And I think as this bull market like comes back, as new users come in and they want to explore NFTs and new content again, now they have like a one-stop, like stepping stone experience into all of that. And yeah, like, you know, February was a good month for us, right? I think like all of that, like hard work and grinding and all of this is paying off, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Jack, I'd love to dive into what I think has become one of the most like significant issues of our time in the NFT space and Web3, where you really have struck, have like kind of staked out a stance that's quite different from a lot of other marketplaces. And you know, obviously with the rise of Blur, bringing creator royalties down to zero, OpenSea kind of bending over backwards to try and like and accommodate that new reality, much to the chagrin of creators. You've staked out a very different position. You have said that creator royalties matter, that you want to enforce them, and you've actually employed the strategy of going to the leading projects, the Yuga Labs of the world, the Pudgy Penguins of the world, you know, and beyond, to actually, you know, create these marketplaces in partnership with them. Tell us a little bit about why creator royalties are so important to you, and also your strategy for understanding the market landscape and opening up that lane for Magic Eden.
Yeah, happy to. This is an issue like, you know, near and dear to our hearts, so like more than happy to talk about it. I should say like one thing up front, which is, actually, I have a huge amount of respect for all of the participants, like all the players in the NFT industry. We're still really early, right? This is like DeFi 2019 kind of thing. Like it's all really, really early. And it's okay for people to have different strategy and have different worldviews. It's okay. I also think that like taking fungible tokens as an example, there'll be like different segments and different niches and people explore different things. That's totally okay. For us, our worldview is like this, which is NFTs is a technology, it's a tool, right? But you need the visionaries and the creators to use the tool to make something great, and that pulls the users in. And today, we own, like the amount of creators that's in Web3, I would still think is really low. There is still like hundreds of millions of people who can be potentially onboarded into this and can use this technology in a way that like truly can make digital ownership universal, right? Like really show this new internet. So that is always our worldview of the growth loop, which is we need to, Web3 as an industry needs to provide something unique to creators that make them care about Web3. And then they have to get something here that they uniquely cannot get in Web2. And that's where they come here. And then with their vision and their innovation, they bring users, right? In Web2, there is royalties, but Web2, you have to be Rihanna or like Jay-Z and have like, you know, 10 lawyers to get that kind of stuff. But in Web3, this is by default, like the industry norm. This is a technology norm that you get this, and you get this out of the box self-service. So that is our worldview. And that's our worldview of how this ecosystem grows and can make this 1,000x, 10,000x bigger than what it is. Then separately, like, then why do we feel so much conviction to bet on it, right? Like when everyone else is doing something different. Well, there's two. One is like the philosophy thing, right, about our worldview. And number two is like, I think just real life practical experience, because Magic Eden on Solana, like we had to go through our own fog of war with royalties. Like we had, you know, Solana had the same problem as ETH. Like royalties was not protected at the technology level. It affected, everyone went to optional royalties, including Magic Eden. But our view has always been that we should build technology that protects royalties in a robust way, and then we will bring it back. And on Solana, we did do that. We partnered with Metaplex to build to push out this new protocol called PNFT, and it protects royalties. And now royalties is the industry standard on Solana, right? So to me, like, not only do I deeply believe it in a worldview perspective, but I've seen the practical like experience. Then for like EVM, I think the only gap is it's waiting for a company, it's waiting for a leader to like to stake, have conviction and like bet on this. Because the tech already works. The tech, you know, Solana already shows that the tech works. Solana already shows that the market wants it. It has product market fit. The only thing that's missing in ETH is for someone to like bet and put their name behind this tech and really push it, right? And like, I think we're, you know, we're glad to be those people. And we're proud to be those people in this case.
It's really incredible. What's that thing that like your tech team is very, because you guys rapid prototype some incredible things, like, right? Like Bitcoin marketplace, boom. I think it was a matter of like a week or two from I remember doing Discord trades and like trusting someone. I remember crossing my fingers. This was like, when was this? It was like on a Tuesday, random ass Tuesday night. I was speaking with Benny Redbeard and he's like, bro, like, this is the Discord to join. Everybody's doing OTC, and I remember like I just said like 0.2 a Bitcoin, right? And my wife's like, "What are you doing? What are you doing sending that?" You know, like, but then in a matter of days, if I don't remember, it was like 2-3 weeks. You guys stood up the Bitcoin marketplace, right? And what I've noticed from you guys in the market, Jack, is like you guys have a very agile DNA, you know, and you have an incredible team, by the way. Like, shout out to Tiffany, shout out to everybody, you know, because they come and communicate with us of what's coming up next, right? So we gonna get that privilege to see things before the market does in some way or another, under embargo, of course, and things of that capacity. But I'm just so impressed by your team's ability to rapid prototype things. How does that get infused into a DNA? Because as founders here, you know, founder to founder, like, I similarly went through that element of like, we're growing too fast. Oh my God, we're going to fucking die. Holy shit. Like, what is this? What do you mean a social media post has 2-3 people approved, bro? It's like, just get it out. You know what I mean? How do you instill that ethos of rapid prototyping, agiling, or it's, as everyone in the tech community knows it, how do you instill fuck it, ship it into a scalable organization like you guys have?
Dude, with like definitely not there, man. So
the market disagrees, by the way. The market disagrees. Your speed to market is pretty intentional.
Everything's pretty relative, impressive. Right? Everything's relative.
Yeah. No, that's very kind, man. Like, really, yeah, it's very, very kind. I think, number one, I think, like, I think the short end of the answer is it's the same. We learn from our mistakes. And we have to, man, I really think Magic Eden, we fucking have to make mistakes on both sides before we finally learn. Like, we have to make every mistake first, and then we finally get there. Except maybe it's just we make mistakes faster than everyone else, and then, like, then we, like, finally hit on the thing. I legit think that, man. I don't think there's, you know, real special sauce. I think there was a time when Magic Eden moved really, really fast, like, even faster than now, right? And then there was a period where Magic Eden was very slow. Very, very slow. And not only was slow, the quality of the product sometimes we ship was not good. It didn't hit the bullseye, right? And then we had to do a lot of work to, like, then find the true path. Some things, like just being really, really tangible, some things that we learned is, number one, I think it starts with the founders. Like, this value of, like, moving fast, it has to, or these ethos, man, it doesn't come from like a PowerPoint deck, you know, like from an ivory tower. It just comes from people. It is what, and you have to believe in that. And if the founders or the leaders of the company believes in it, then it will get done. But you have to have conviction in your own heart. And there was a time when, like, for example, there was a time when I thought, okay, now maybe we're shipping too fast. And now we have to, like, build things to scale and, like, you know, like, be more methodical because, you know, shipping too fast also had cost. And we overcorrected. But when we overcorrected, we realized that was one, that was didn't get the outcome we want, but that was also not who we are in our hearts. And we were not, it's like dissonance, you know, it's like identity dissonance. You're trying to be someone that you're not. So then, you know, being like tactical about it is, I think you have to be true to who you are and just pick a lane. We, Magic Eden, we're like very fast kind of people, and we like shipping product this way, and we don't apologize for it. And this is the culture of the company, and it stems from the founders, then to our executive team, then to the working team. And that's how, if you want to join Magic Eden, you kind of like have to sign up for it. I don't think that's the only way to succeed, by the way, because if you look at like Apple, Airbnb, those are very methodical companies. They don't win through speed, I think. They also, but they win nevertheless. But Magic Eden, we win through this, right? Then the second thing is, actually, my co-founder Sid says this, which is like amazing. It's like there's no silver bullets, there's only lead bullets, which basically means like there's no fucking one amazing answer. You just have to grind very small things down every day. So, for example, to move faster, I actually love this about Sid, my co-founder, is like to move faster, we realize when we hit 100 people, all these ideas were in Slack, and it's very hard to grok what's going on and follow up and chase down the loose ends. So then our CTO, who has a billion things to do, he like rolled out Notion and like a specific system to use Notion to like track. It was like an end-to-end system. It's like, here's how you write a product suggestion. Here's who should like reply to it. Here's like the decision-making like little template. And then here's how it gets put into like a task tracking board. And then he ran the training, and he was like very militant about it. And then he started like, he made this shame emoji inside our Slack to say, hey, you're not using it the right way, shame emoji. And he made it fun.
So kind of like the bell, right? Like shame bell, like the shame bell.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because it's an emoji, it's like, it's a little friendlier. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's got the right balance.
Exactly. So it was like, it was still fun, lighthearted, and it didn't feel like authoritarian, but people got the message. But this is our CTO who had to manage like 10 different projects. And he would go in there and like be like, oh, you know what? We should add an emoji here. And you know what? Here's how like the Asana board should be tracked. And you would think that for someone like him, it's almost like it's above him. You know, it's beneath him to do something like this. But no, there is no silver bullets, only lead bullets. And only we care about velocity and like streamlining things enough to like go do this. And this is one of 50 things that we did, you know, like then we have to like every small thing, you have to chip away at it, and then you start moving faster. And dude, there was a time when we didn't have this. It was a fucking mess. You know, it was chaos. And it was slow, right?
Makes a lot of sense.
I can imagine it.
Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I'd love to hear, that's fascinating. And I'd love to hear, you know, this culture of shipping fast, this mission versus opportunity like mindset. There's so many factors that play in Web3. You have investors who probably have an idea of what they want you to be, you know, or what the right move is, you know, in this climate may not match with the things that you see in the marketplace. You've got your users who are very vocal, especially in the ecosystem that you started in with Solana. Like, that's degen culture, right? Like, they don't hold back, right? You know exactly where you stand with them. So you have all of these forces, and you have your employees. You have all of these forces pulling you in different directions, all like that. What do you think have been some of like the biggest lessons and also like turning points in terms of like navigating all of those different interests and staying true to where, to getting where you are?
Yeah. It's a great question. Look, I think the biggest lessons are a lot of the stuff that we honestly just talked about, because all of that stuff came from lessons. We didn't know that from day one. You know, we had to like make a lot of mistakes to then distill that. And we do put in effort to distill it. You know, I didn't come up with mission versus opportunity on the fly. It's because we had like a problem to solve, which is like, okay, how do we communicate this philosophy to the whole company so that we all, you know, work the same way and think the same way? And then we had to like really think about it. I think a couple of other things, right? Just the things that I think is really important, you know, I to answer this question of like, yeah, so many different people pulling you around. Like, how do you actually like really focus on doing something? I think number one, you have to focus on yourself. That's the most important thing, right? And we actually got this advice from like Fred Ursem, like really early on, because Paradigm's one of our investors, amazing guys, and Fred came to, you know, talk to our company, and he gave us this advice that, hey, like, don't focus on competitors, focus on yourself. Early on, I didn't internalize that, right? I didn't really understand it because I was in this paranoid mode. But yeah, like 2.5 years into building Magic Eden, that was like actually so right. That was really right. Because when you focus on yourself, your own mission and your own strat and have conviction in it, everything else starts falling into place, because you don't get this franticness. You become more quiet. You can think more long-term, more strategically. And execution is better too, because execution is way more predictable. There's no like much less thrashiness or like pivots, right? Like this kind of thing. But it takes a lot to have that mindset, to really like internalize that mindset. And then once you've internalized the mindset, it takes a lot of thinking to think about what is the true strategy that's going to help and win. So I think that's one, like focusing on yourself and don't like think less about like what's happening. And that's very anti-crypto, by the way. I think crypto is the characteristic of crypto is like, wow, crypto Twitter has this like new meta of the month, and you have to like catch that, right? I'm actually like quite biased against that now. And then the second thing is, relatedly, once you think about yourself and you outline your long-term view, like your long-term mission and strat, man, you gotta, that then puts you on the front foot. Because what, you know, to answer your question, Matt, like the community says X, the investor says Y, and your employees says Z. Man, the solution to that is the leaders of the company who run the company, you have to get on the front foot and you communicate what your worldview is. And then it's like, this is what we believe and this is what we're willing to bet on, and you can roll with us. And if you roll with us, you're very welcome. If you don't want to roll with us, that's okay. It's cool. Like, it's like free market, right? But like, being focused on yourself, that proactively outlining your long-term vision and being on the front foot, that then sets the framework and sets the anchoring to say, this is who Magic Eden is. This is what we believe in. And if you believe in what we're doing, whether you're our community, you're our investors, you know, our team or potential team in the future, then like sign up. And if you don't want to sign up, it's cool. You know, that's also fine, right? It took me a long time to like really figure that part out, right?
Sounds like you've been integrating it really well, man. And it looks like transparent conversation is very important for you as well, because like everything you keep saying, it's all about really vulnerable and very honest, right? Like very few founders in the space would come up on here and talk about these moments so openly, right? I resonate with you about focusing on yourself. You know, it took me probably two failed companies. I have two failures under my belt. And I remember watching the Olympics. Michael Phelps was doing, I think, was going to go up for the world record breaking, like most medals or whatever. And there was a second place guy who was beating him by a nanosecond. And I'll send you this picture later, but like, literally there was a single moment that was, I think, like two one thousandths of a second, right? Like you time it, but they captured it on photo, and the competitor was looking at Michael Phelps, and you could see that they were there. Michael Phelps is just highly focused on just like, you could just see Michael focus, but the competitor is facing him to the side. And I think it was the butterfly. So you didn't even need to, like, right? You could just stay like, right. And this photo just got ingrained in me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that microsecond when you take a look, and you're absolutely right, man. As much as I love our community, our industry, it's also unsustainably on FOMO, right? Like, it's the next thing, the Solana, the shitcoin, the Pepe, the with hat, right? Without the hat, without the shirt, right? Like, it's on Twitter, it's on Farcaster, it's on Blue Sky, right? Like, it's like all these different things. And it's so incredibly powerful to hear another founder who's just like, yo, pay attention to your intuition, right? Pay attention to the things that you believe in. And not this, like, I'm sorry to say this, but there's so many founders in our community that are full of bullshit, where they're like, oh, we're the signal, you know, like, and it's just so hard to find true founders who have fundamentals, right? And so, like, just hearing this from you, Jack, I know this is our first time meeting, is just like, it's just such a sound of fresh air, where it's not talking points, right? It's not your PR, your press team telling you hit this note, hit that note. And we appreciate that level of honesty and candor, because there's somebody out there listening that may be starting a next company and maybe, you know, be influencing it. But speaking of degenning, because I know we spoke on it, Mr. Farmer over here, let's talk about your wallet. Like, who are you collecting right now? Who's an artist? What's a community? Like, give us the alpha.
Oh yeah, man. Totally. All right, not financial advice. I'm a pure collector, by the way. Dude, I'm also like the exit liquidity inside the company, because people are always like, their stuff. And then I'm always the last guy to buy. And man, it's actually pretty bad. Yeah, I'm kind of definitely in the doghouse with the, you know, with the family and stuff. Dude, so like a couple of things. We have a really... really strong partnership with Yuga, so I've got a few apes, I've been actually thinking of, it's really funny, I've been thinking of getting a punk to, like, as a gift for my wife, and
ooh.
I started talking about it like a while back when in Hong Kong at A-Fest, and it's like the ultimate mid curve, you know. At that time I was like, oh man, 40 ETH, this is like pretty hefty. And then just like after 3 months, it's like 65 ETH floor or something. I'm like, why does this happen to me all the time? Like, anyway, so that's one. I mean, I'm also a big fan of art as well. So like, Thank You X, creator that we work with a lot. Also Pixel Lord, like a multi-chain creator, but had a few calls with him. I really like his pieces. So yeah, really into that. And then, man, I'm like kind of... I don't have as many ordinals as I would like. And this is really funny, because so I actually want to collect more ordinals. There's a lot of like really cool, interesting stuff happening there. Yeah, people always like told me about Node Monkeys or like, you know, Quantum Cast, these kind of things.
The ninjas, like, yeah, we love, yeah, the ninjas, like, bro.
Puppets.
Like,
yeah, it's like I can't make the same mistake again. Like, you know, if I know if I buy it now, it's you know, top signal kind of thing. But I think that it was, the ordinal story was really funny, because at some point I felt pretty ashamed of myself that I didn't have more ordinals coming from like one of the biggest Bitcoin marketplaces. And I was using our own product going, wow, this is like really hard to onboard into Bitcoin. Like it is, it's tough. And like and I would consider myself a very advanced NFT user, and I'm intimidated to go into ordinals. Like, what's with this different address? why is Ordinals not called NFTs, right? Like, how do I even buy Bitcoin? I kind of forgot, right? Because I haven't been bought Bitcoin for so long. And that's like a lot of the driving force for us to like build a wallet, have like non-custodial swaps to make onboarding across these different chains much easier, right? So anyway, we'd like to pick up more Ordinals, I think is the short end of the story. But
is there an artist that's not established or, you know, hasn't broken through the mainstream adoption of our community, right? I know you mentioned ThankYouX because he's an OG, he's a dear friend of ours as well. But like, is there one of those artists that you're like, yo, I was shopping around, I was degenning at 2 a.m. and I came across this and I just had to have it. Is there anyone out there that you kind of want to give a shout out that could like help elevate their profile?
Yeah, I actually can't remember their name. Let me, I feel really bad.
Happens to the best.
Yeah. The name starts with W something. It's actually
send us like a little like selfie video when you figure out splice it in.
I think he's actually a Southeast Asian artist.
Starts with W.
Starting with W, yeah. And I actually found him on, I think I found him on Drip or but he's like, yeah, he's like a digital artist. I just like
describe his art, you know, like give me the visual. I'm a visual learner.
I can't do justice, you know, to it. If I'm saying something like this, I want to be like precise.
I think the best way you can pay homage to him, you can just be like, give him a tweet shout out. Be like, hey, I was just on the NFT Now podcast, forgot who you were.
Drew a blank.
Give a huge shout out to blank, 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 you know, like. We can pay it forward that way. And then we'll put the tweet here. We're like superimpose it on at the time. Well, I know we're coming up on time. So we have this cool segment, Jack. Matt, you want to tell them about what the segment's all about?
Yeah, 100%. So we have a rapid fire. Oh, yeah. We have a rapid fire segment, bullish or bearish. So, you know, kind of your hot takes, bullish or bearish on various topics. And, you know, you could give us a little explanation as to why and all that. So why don't we kick it off? Oof. Bullish or bearish Avalanche?
Bullish. Yeah, bullish.
Bullish.
I've been hearing a lot about great things they're doing with gaming and all of this kind of stuff. So yeah, I think bullish, yeah.
100K BTC by the end of the year.
Oh, bullish, for sure. I thought, man, I thought we were going to hit 60K like H2. It's, you know,
right,
all-time high yesterday or something, right? So it's, yeah, definitely very bullish. I'm so bullish that it hurts, you know, like that's how bullish.
I know the feeling. Gotta ask it, bullish or bearish OpenSea?
That's a spicy one. Actually, I'm not going to answer that question because, look, I mean, the whole thing that we've been talking about is focusing on yourself, right? That was the key worldview of ours. And at the same time, you know, I have a lot of respect for all founders in the game. I actually think that, you know, if we sit down, have dinner, we'll probably share a lot of like war stories about stupid shit that happens in the space. So everyone's trying their best and the story is never finished, right? So it's all good.
Bullish or bearish, digital art transcending into the physical world?
Bullish. Yeah, very bullish.
I gotta ask, is there anything you're bearish about?
Dude, I can't be more bullish about anything. Like, think about it. Like, no, that's a great question.
The US dollar. The US dollar.
Everyone's bearish on that. Well, yeah. You know, Jack, one thing that might be interesting, actually, like what is like a big issue you see in the space? Like what is something that's just like that you think is really fucked up about the space right now that needs to change, you know?
Okay. So I think that, I have two things. How about this? Right. Since I was being coy about some of the other questions.
You're being diplomatic, you know, it's all right.
I actually think more of the space should focus on simplicity. You know, and I think that's a really great saying. I think it came from like Mark Twain, like a really, esteemed author. It's like, it takes longer to write a shorter letter, right? And I fundamentally think crypto is already complicated. All these different chains are complicated. Like even NFTs is complicated. All these different standards are complicated. Like all of this, right? And, you know, Bitcoin, it took 20 years, it took like 15 years for it to get to become where it is now. But the narrative became a lot simpler and the interaction model became a lot simpler, right? Now you can buy it through ETF. For us as an industry in crypto, for many things, whether it's NFTs, DeFi, all of this, we should make it simpler. But the meme is always, you kind of want to catch the new latest deep tech innovation, like, you know, liquid restaking or something like that, right? But actually, like, to me, that's actually, there is value for a certain segment of like builders and, you know, folks to focus on that. That's cool. That's actually okay. But if we want to really like onboard the masses, billions of people, not millions, billions of people, we should focus on simplicity, right? Like, why is iPhone so beautiful? Like, and it's why did it have product market fit, so on? Man, they must have spent years fitting this, like, such a powerful device into something very simple. And I think that's what we need in crypto. But to the point of what we were talking about before, like, crypto has such a frantic, you know, flavor of the month mentality. It's hard to think, like, you know, investing and making something simple and really having the patience to make something simple. So, yeah, I think that piece. And I think the second piece would be, relatedly, most people in crypto today are basically like early adopters. They are like, you know, in the 1980s, that we're like the nerds who bought the first like computer PC and we like were wiring stuff together in the garage. That's who we are, right? So the things that we want are actually not a lot of the things that the mainstream really want. And I think something that's kind of screwed up about the space is we over-rotate towards the loudest voices on X or like you know, the loudest influencer or the loudest thought leader, because that's the stuff that we care about. But actually the really hard to find problem and hard to solve problem is the shit that like the mainstream folks really care about, right? And we should like put more mind share there, and we should talk about more about that. And we as a space, we should celebrate that more. Because if we celebrate it more, then more people will solve those problems. But instead, in the space, we celebrate like the latest complex deep tech thing, you know, and I think that's actually imbalanced. And I think, you know, we wish we did more of that, like in the industry, on the other side.
That was one. What was your second one? Right, you said you had two.
He said.
Oh, okay.
That was the two.
I was trying to get another one out of there. Yeah, it was too good. I just wanted more. I wanted more. You know.
Man, there's so much alpha in this conversation. But Jack, thank you so much for joining us. I can't wait to like re-listen to this, man. There's so much gold here. Just thank you so much for joining us, and really appreciate your time. I know you're traveling in East Denver as we speak. Matt, any other final words?
No, I think this has been just a really great conversation. Jack, thank you for being so candid, for being so real. And, you know, as we said before, we're now media. Since day one, it's all been about empowering creators. So we're definitely aligned with what you're doing and with the creator royalties and really championing that space. And so look forward to continuing to have great conversations in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Wow. Well, that season debut did not disappoint. A lot to unpack there. Ollie, what stood out for you?
Well, first and foremost, I was taking notes for the first time. You know, I was like,
I saw you notebook. Like scribbling away there. Because you're a handwritten guy. That's how you roll.
I'm a handwritten guy. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm always like trying to integrate what I'm learning in these lessons. And man, like, one thing that really got a takeaway was like the vulnerability and candidness of Jack to speak to the mistakes that they've made. Right. I think I'm currently reading this book called Extreme Ownership by Jocko Wilkins. And he goes into this element of like taking extreme ownership about everything that you do. Right. And Jack just exemplified that through and through in our conversation, man. I love the little ethos. I love the one-liners. You know, I really love the mission versus opportunity. No silver bullets, only lead bullets. Like, you know, these little like things go a long way, right? Like these monograms or these little sayings or these phrases go a long way when you're especially in the deep market. But the one takeaway that I really loved for me that stood out is like focus on yourself. You know, in our industry, so it's so combated with so much noise, so much this here, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Farcaster, the group chats, the Telegram, the WhatsApp, you know, the this, the that, the shitcoin, the meme coin, whatever it is. There's so much to be true to be said that there's something commendable around founders who have strong conviction and stick to it, right? We saw that with the creator royalties. We saw that with the Ornals. And that's a leader I can get behind.
Yeah,
what absolutely. Did you think, Matt?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I thought I was actually really pleasantly surprised by how candid he was, how unscripted he was, how willing he was to really dive into the real talk and talk about some of the challenges and talk about some of the elements you don't see on the polished exterior. Right. And so I loved his framing of mission versus opportunity. That really resonated for me as a founder as well. Definitely something that you have to navigate, especially in this space, which can be full of so many distractions and shiny objects and things that seem like great opportunities. But are they really, you know, driving forward your overarching mission? And, you know, I love the fact that he's like a degen too. You know what I mean? It comes through, man. I remember, I'll never forget, when Magic Eden was kind of like taking that turn. All of a sudden, I don't know who their social media intern is, but they need a promotion because they were in my replies. They were in NFT Now's replies, and they weren't doing it in I have to engage so I can engage. Pithy, smart memes, things like that. And, like you said, it comes from the top, right? And so, creating that culture, you know, it shines through, so.
Man, I was just taken away by your feedback that my scrunchie just broke. So.
The power of memes. The power of memes.
I absolutely love it. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening on this episode. This is the season starter of season 3. We have some incredible guests coming up. If you have a moment, please give us 5 stars on wherever you listen to this platform. It goes a long way, believe me. And if you want to write a comment or two, write it down. DM me, screenshot it, and DM me, and I'll promise to send you a special gift. But without further ado, Matt, take it away.
There it is. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you again on season 3 of the NFT Now podcast.